Okay, welcome back. So now we are going to talk about one of the Bible verses that has been most misused and distorted, which is this one right here, Genesis 3:16. This says, "To the woman he said, I will greatly increase your labor pains. With pain you will give birth to children." You will, there's two different versions here. One is you will want to control your husband, and the other one is you will chase after your husband, but he will dominate you. This is a really fascinating verse that's been used to do a lot of damage to a lot of people all over the world. So let's just break it down step by step here. And first, look at it with a different lens. And the lens that I look at this with is that God, as the manufacturer and designer, knew exactly how he designed us. And he knew that when we are operating outside of his design, that we were going to experience negative consequences. This was not a curse. This was a consequence of operating outside of God's design. Right? So, and we're going to get more into the scientific and the biological and the neurochemical in a little bit here. And it's all going to tie in together, you'll see. But I will greatly increase your labor pains. Well, remember earlier when we talked about a soulmate and we had a definition of what is your soul and what is a spirit, and we had the definitions of those, right? Well, what happened after the fall? Adam and Eve lost their spiritual connection to God. They had an open doorway to God. They were in the presence of God, right? So we had to have Jesus come back to restore the kingdom and then give us the gift of the Holy Spirit, right? But what happens when you don't have that? Can you imagine prior to the fall that Eve was had intuition and communion and a conscience that was in direct alignment with God, right? How much do you think that that would decrease somebody's labor pains, being in the presence of God as your labor coach? Anybody ever been to a childbirth in this room? You have? Would you like to have God and his spirit be in his presence as your labor coach?
Yeah,
right?
Really.
Right? And one of the big things in hospitals now is that hospitals have this thing called a doula. And her only job is to come to the birth of a child in support of the mother. That's all she does. She's not a midwife. She doesn't do anything medical. She is just there as a spiritual, emotional support person. Right? It's a whole job that people have these days. Now, the science has found that when a woman has a doula, that it decreases her pains in labor, and it decreases the length of her labor. Right? So can you imagine giving labor in the presence and communion with God as your labor coach? Of course you're going to have less pain. Right? So this is a natural consequence. This is not a curse. And I think it's really important that we break that distortion and squash that lie. Okay, so with pain you'll give birth to children. Now you will chase after or want to control your husband. Two different translations. I agree with them both, so I included both of them in there. And we've talked a couple different times about Barnes & Noble. For those of you who remember Barnes & Noble, there was an entire section on relationships. 96% of those books are written for women. There are very few dating and relationship books that are written for men. And when you do find them, they're more primarily Christian. So, you will chase after your husband and want to control your husband, but he will dominate you. I mean, do we even have to discuss the domination of women that's happened throughout the world? Right? So what this talks about is it's taking our natural, biological, God-given, neurochemical impulses, and it's talking about what happens with them when they're distorted. Right? So in God's plan, a woman actually has a neurological, biochemical process that bonds her to her mate. And that's to her own benefit in raising her children, right? Now, let's think about if a woman didn't have that and she was outside the presence of God, you know what most women would say? I can do this by myself. I've got this. I can have this baby by myself. I can raise it by myself. I don't need you. How many people have heard that in our culture? Right? I remember the episode of Murphy Brown. It was really controversial a couple decades ago when she decided to become a single mother. It was like, but now that's very commonplace. Right? So if a woman does not have this biochemical bonding to her mate and she's outside the presence of God, her natural inclination is going to say, I want to do this myself. Right? But the thing is that for any of you who have had a baby, once you get into that ninth month, and then once you've gone through childbirth, and once you have that little baby that you don't want to leave to go back to work, you understand the value of having someone who's there that is going to protect you during this really vulnerable time that you're going through emotionally, biochemically, physically, right? And of course, the baby needs cared for and is vulnerable as well. So God had a plan when he designed us and put us together. Now, your husband will try to dominate you, and of course, we don't have to go too much into that. We've all seen it, and it's happening all over the world. But what is this? This is a distortion of God's commandment to man and also his natural inclination to protect a woman, right? So instead of protecting her, he's going to take it a step further, distort that, and he's going to try to dominate her, right? Control her, tell her what to do. And in his mind, because I'm protecting you, right? Now, also, when we look at how our relationships mirror God's relationship with Adam, right? Our God is not a God of domination. He's a God of free will. And we're supposed to mirror that in our relationships as well. Okay, this is one of my very favorite topics, five commandments that God gave Adam. Let's just start with number one. God put Adam in Eden, and that is in his presence, right? So in Hebrew, if you look at the definition of Eden, it is a spot on earth where God dwells. An open door to God's presence. So, you know, archaeologists and anthropologists talk about the fact that they can't find Eden. Well, no, you can't find Eden because Eden is not a specific place, but it is a presence, being in the presence of God. So, number one, Adam was to be in the presence of God. Number two, Adam was supposed to work. Here's one that we really, really misunderstand. Now, the Hebrew word for work is ergon. And what ergon means is to become. God didn't command Adam to get a job. He commanded Adam to become himself. Right? So have you ever heard people who they're going to therapy or they're going to a lot of seminars or doing personal development work, reading books, right? They say, I'm working on myself, right? So that is the commandment here. Now, earlier we talked about us all having unique gifts, right? This is part of that, where we need to identify our spiritual gifts and develop those spiritual gifts and become a leader. Every single one of us, male and female, is supposed to be a leader, and we're supposed to be a leader in our area of spiritual gifting. Right? So And by the way, people are just very consumed with, you know, leaders and followers and hierarchies. You know, there's this whole thing about not having hierarchies and everyone being equal. And I mean, even companies are having these things where nobody has an office anymore. Everybody sits at tables, even the executives, right? In the middle of, you know, one big room. So people are really against hierarchies. Now, there are two different kinds of hierarchies that you should be aware of. And this comes from the research of Rianne Eisler. She's the president of the Center for Partnership Studies. She's also written a book called The Real Wealth of Nations. And that book talks about the social wealth indicators that are important that determine people's quality of life beyond things like economics and the GDP, right? I really, really enjoy Rianne Eisler's work. But one of the, hope you can edit this out because I totally lost my train of thought there. My ear popped, you guys, again. I can hear myself talking the whole time. It's so distracting. From the flight, my ears just got all messed up. Thank you. I just can't remember what I was going to say about Rianne Eisler now. Oh, hierarchies. Yes. Okay, good. Okay, so Rianne Eisler gave us a lot of clarification about hierarchies. And there are two kinds of hierarchies. One are hierarchies of dominance. And we've talked about those before, where you are trying to manipulate or control other people by force or by fear. But there's actually another kind of hierarchy. It's called a hierarchy of actualization. What does that mean? That means you are going to defer to the authority of someone who has more experience, right? If I need a heart transplant, I do not want to go to my family doctor. I want to go to the leading heart surgeon at UCLA. Or wherever it is, right? So that is a hierarchy of actualization, right? Hierarchies are actually okay in that situation. So now back to becoming yourself, developing your spiritual gifts, becoming a leader in that area. Here are questions that women want to ask men when they're out on a date. What is your vision? Your goals, your purpose, your plans, and your gifts. Great questions. Now, the third command that God gave Adam was to cultivate. And what cultivate means is to make better. So, everything under Adam's care, he was to make better. And this is another excellent question for women to ask when they're evaluating a man. Is this man going to make me or my situation better? Is he going to improve how things are going in my life? Or is he going to be a depleting factor, emotionally exhausting, right? Financially, whatever it is. So Adam is to cultivate everything that is under his care and make it better. And here's the way that I like to look at it, because of course I, with the VIP matchmaking and the millionaire matchmaking, have worked with a lot of very wealthy women. Wealthy women face a very challenging situation, which is many times they want to meet men who are at an equal place to them financially in life, right? And so is that the right measure? Well, good luck arguing that with them initially. You have some work to do before you can even have that conversation. But one of the things that they'll say is they want to meet a man who's wealthy. So I say, okay, that's fine. Well, why don't we distinguish between the different kinds of wealthy men, right? There are men who pursue money as a means to their own enrichment and power, right? That's one type of man. But then we have another man. That's a man who has identified his spiritual gifts. He has become a leader in those, and he has the ability to use those to generate an income. That is a totally different man. So one man is receiving blessings to just his own personal benefit, enrichment, and gain. The other man is the blessings flow to him and through him, right? And so the question is not how many people serve him, but how many people does he serve? Okay? So now, your spiritual gift is not always going to be an income-producing gift. It's not always going to be your vocation, your occupation. And it might be something that you do as a hobby. You do it on the side. You do it as a volunteer. And that's okay, too. But when we're comparing these, you know, different types of wealthy men, and in addition to wealthy women, a lot of women, when they don't know how to evaluate a man for these things, their criteria for finding someone is called chemistry and attraction and money, right? That's what they look for when they don't know the right things to look for. And we all know that you can meet somebody who's really attractive and have a lot of chemistry with them, and as you get to know them, they become ugly because on the inside, they're ugly. Right? And then we know that the opposite is true, is that you can meet somebody and initially just, you know, not really give it a second thought. There's no attraction, no chemistry, nothing. And as you get to know them and their personality and their passions and they share their gifts and their excitement with you, it becomes magnetic. And all of a sudden, they're the most gorgeous person in the world to you. Right? The chemistry and attraction and the money are the default criteria that people go to when they don't have the right criteria. And that has now been put into technology and monetized, and it's called swiping right. Yeah. Right? So the fourth command that God gave Adam was naming. What's really exciting about this is that God did it first. He created and then he named. And he named the earth. And then he created Adam, and he said, okay, Adam, why don't you try it? So Adam got to model God by naming the animals. And there are two things about naming that are really interesting and important. Of course, there is the verse that talks about whatever Adam named, it then became. There is power and authority in a man's voice and in his words, right? And that's modeling God. He's made in his image, right? So that's the one thing about naming that's really important. The next thing about naming that is also important is that there's a saying, if you name it, you claim it, right? God named the earth. God named the spirit man. He has taken responsibility for us. Adam named Eve. And so there's all this controversy. Do I take my husband's last name when I get married? Do I hyphenate my last name? Right? And it really comes down to part of this concept. It's part submission and headship, right? But it's also that part of this concept with naming. So if you name it, you claim it. You're responsible for it. You are the source of it, and you're going to take care of it. So as God is the source of man, the spirit, both male and female, and he has named us and takes care of us. So men are supposed to model that same behavior in taking care of women. So very important. And as you can see, the world has been turned upside down from that in many, many ways, right? And there's even women who say that, you know, they don't want that and that's not good for them and that's disempowering. But I will tell you that if we go back to our five types of relationships that are the relationships of the world and how disempowering to women they are, there is nothing more disempowering than being in, let's say, a home with a man where you have children. You're the woman, you're taking care of the children, right? he's bringing home a paycheck, and you're the one, as the mom, who is the primary caregiver, right? So you're doing the housework, you're taking care of the kids, and maybe you're working less hours so that you can do that, but guess what? His paycheck is going towards his mortgage, towards his Social Security, towards his 401k. When things fall apart, you have nothing. Right? There is nothing more disempowering for a woman than to be with a man who is not committed to her, who is not giving her his name, and is not protecting and taking care of her. So the last one, the fifth commandment that we have is to protect. God commanded Adam to guard and protect the garden. Right? And he's also to guard and protect everything that is under his care. Now, we talked about a kingdom before, and the impetus of a king as opposed to a hunter is the impetus of a king is to expand his territory and to defend it and protect it. Right? So, this is an important concept. Now, here are three gifts that God gave Adam. God gave Adam his image. And there's a lot of talk about people doing work on themselves. I'm working on myself. I'm working my self-esteem. I'm working on my self-image, right? And many times, people have to do a lot of that work because they don't realize that they have already been made in God's image. So they're searching for an image and an identity that they can relate to. And so what are some of those images? A Louis Vuitton bag, a football jersey with the name of a player on the back of it, right? We're searching for these images that we can impress upon ourselves to give ourselves more value because we forgot we're made in God's image and our value comes from Him. Now, being in the image of God means that you have the spirit, the nature, and the moral character. The second gift that God gave Adam was function. God said, "Let us make man in our likeness." So we can function like God. Whatever God speaks comes to pass. And we talked about that a minute ago with the naming, right? His voice carried power and authority, and whatsoever Adam called every living creature, that was their name. And then the third gift that God gave Adam was his word. Adam knew, and this is what so many people are missing right now. So when if you are going to start working as a coach in matchmaking, this is an important concept to key in on when you're evaluating people for dating readiness, right? So God gave Adam his word, and because of that, Adam knew who he was. He knew how he functioned. He knew where he was, what he was supposed to do, how he was supposed to improve his environment, how to protect his environment, and the direct word of God. Adam, as a result, was a whole, well-balanced and well-adjusted individual. And it wasn't until all of this came to pass before Eve was even on the radar, right? So when we go back to these five commandments that God gave to Adam, once they were fulfilled is when God said, "This man should not be alone." Here is what I tell women who are evaluating a man, who are looking at these five criteria. If he does not have all five of these criteria, this man should be alone. Right? Okay, so this man should not be alone. God established his kingdom on one man, not a couple. This is a huge, huge, huge thing for us to recognize and talk about as a church, because there's a lot of discussion, which we alluded to earlier, that the family is the building block for society, and Christianity is all about the family. And I'm going to say absolutely 100%, yes, you are right, but it is the second building block. The first building block is the individual, and individuals cannot even be in a relationship with someone else until they have established their relationship with God, right? So you know, there's a saying, and I think we have it on one of the slides here later, one bad egg ruins the omelet. You can make a 5-egg omelet, and you've got one bad one in there, and it's going to ruin your omelet. So God established his kingdom not on a couple, but on an individual. Right? Now, he did say that Adam shouldn't be alone, but he never commanded us to marry. There is nowhere in the Bible that says, thou shalt marry. Not one place. And we're all familiar with Apostle Paul's writings on marriage, which have sparked a lot of debate and will be a really fun class to do later. But just because you are not married does not mean that you have to be alone. And so there's a real difference between loneliness and aloneness, right? And so aloneness means exclusive, in a solitary state, and isolated. We do not serve a God of isolation, nor do we do well, or are we designed to be isolated. Right? We've all heard about people who are in jail and solitary confinement and the horrible things that happen to them physically and mentally, right? We are social beings who are designed to love and be loved. So just because you're single doesn't mean that you need to be alone. And I think that it's very important that the church starts affirming singleness. It's okay to be single, right? In fact, anyone who wants to be married shouldn't even be thinking about it until they have mastered being single. And what was that, our definition before? That whole unique individual, right? In communion with God. So let's go on to our next one. So that brings us to our next point. The key to interpersonal relationships is intrapersonal relationships, our relationship with ourselves. If I don't like me, I cannot love you. Now, another thing that I believe is very important is that God does not choose your mate. God presented Eve to Adam. He did not choose Eve for Adam, nor did he command Adam to be with Eve. Adam recognized Eve as bone of his bones and flesh of his flesh, and he was in awe, right? But God does not choose your mate. I think God does not choose your mate because God is smart. And if God chose your mate, then he would have to be responsible for that if things didn't work out, right? And again, we serve a God of free will. So people who believe that, you know, there's one soulmate who's this predestined person for them who was chosen by God, it's not true. It's not true. You need to squash that belief in people because it can really lead people down a path of some very wrong thinking and also making some wrong decisions, right? So here's my point on that. If God is not going to make the decision for us about being saved, accepting Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior, and our eternal salvation, why is God going to force upon us an earthly mate? Right? He's not. Okay. I think this is a good place to take a break, and we'll come back in just a couple minutes.